Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to another episode of Foul Territory. Ooh, those horns just make my spine tingle. I love that intro. I'm jazzed as usual for Wednesday night, Foul Territory. We're on episode 12, 13, 15, 20. Who remembers? All we know is that we are blasting forth with a ton of big headlines for you today. Travis, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing very well. As you said, lots of headlines. We keep getting blessed by the Lord Wednesday after Wednesday, and there are some races opening up in Major League Baseball that I didn't even think existed a week ago. We have a lot to talk about. God, I'm glad to be here. Like you said, these episodes, it's just like a time vortex of fun, of banter, and of sports. And I hope it never ends, Asa.
Never, ever. I don't want it to end. And thanks again to everybody out there listening. As you know, you can always find old episodes of Foul Territory on backsportspage.com. And please get at us on Twitter at TweetsByTravis.
Get at me.
AsaBaseOnBalls.
Get at him.
At Foul_Territory.
Get at us.
That's the, actually the... You don't spell out underscore. It's just a little one on the keyboard there. Well, let's get right into some baseball. We want to tell you a little bit about what's going on around the league. We want to do that pretty much every episode now because everything's going to be so tightly contested. So we're going to be talking about it a lot. We want you to know going into the episode, you know, going into our baseball block, exactly where the division races and the wild card race stands.
Yeah, absolutely. And the baseball races are so tight and so up to the minute that we've even skipped Tweet Child of Mine, apparently, tonight. And we'll be bringing that favorite segment to you between now and football. But let's get into it. One of the hallmark divisions of baseball, the AL East, is completely upside down. And what is typically a make-or-break game for the Red Sox tonight against the Yankees is now them trying to play spoiler. Going into today, Baltimore is actually tied with the Yankees. They've been holding up a run that no one thought that they would. And the Rays, who always have a flair for the dramatic, are only two games out. Asa, it's coming down to the wire in the AL East.
It absolutely is. And the Rays playing Baltimore tonight, all these teams have so many games left against each other. The Red Sox, even with their horrible season, have a great chance to play spoiler pretty much for everybody. But lost among all of this is while these teams beat up on each other, whoever finishes second in this division isn't even leading the wild card. That's every year we say, oh, you know, well, whoever doesn't win the AL East, the second place team almost always gets the wild card. Not so. This year, leading the wild card is the little team that could out west, the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah, the Oakland A's have overcome a lot this season, especially great odds and low expectations coming out of nowhere. I mean, they are, even at this point, only three games behind the Rangers, who we have at several points labeled one of the only real powerhouse teams left in Major League Baseball at this point. Oakland Athletics hanging around, doing it with some pitching. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They have a really hard schedule from here on out. But they have a lead in the wild card right now. Do you think that they can keep this going, or do you think that the beastly AL East will overtake them?
I do think they can keep it going because you know, I mean, the AL East is going to, they're all going to beat up on each other. I don't think the Yankees are going to run away with that division by any means.
It's true. They're all very talented, deep teams.
Yeah, I don't think the Baltimore has the pitching to you know, take any sizable lead either. So I think Oakland has a good chance. They have proven all year that, you know, they have the pitching to go on runs. You know, even as guys go down, they bring up Daniel Straley from the minor leagues, who's just been a stud. And Tommy Malone, you know, we talked about that Gio Gonzalez trade a couple weeks ago, but that trade looking better and better for the A's. And
yeah,
they have the
yeah.
offense just to score runs when they need it, not necessarily the swagger, not juggernaut Texas Rangers offense.
Absolutely. And, you know, another one of those guys who's coming back from injury is Brett Anderson. He's been in and out of the rotation the last few years. We've given Chris Medlin a real shout out for giving the Braves a shot in the arm. And Brett Anderson has done the exact same for the A's. He's 4-0 in his four starts since coming back with a .69 ERA. And especially with the sad injury to Brandon McCarthy, they really needed him to come in and solidify that pitching staff. And like you said, there's a lot of talent there. And with your, when you're throwing out those five guys every night, you definitely have a chance to win down the stretch.
You definitely do. And for a guy like Anderson, how exciting to come back, probably expecting a rough end to the year with the A's when he could finally even pitch, was probably just going to be excited to throw against live hitters. Now he finds himself in the middle of a heated pennant chase that his, you know, his team's leading the wild card. And in some ways, that's the best boost you could pop. I mean, a player coming back from injury, obviously you never know if they're completely healthy, but assuming they are, they're fresh. They haven't been worn down all year. Now this is a guy you can really lean on. And like you said, only three games back of the Rangers? Heck, they could win the West. These Oakland A's could go deep into the postseason, and I don't think anybody would be surprised.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point about Brett Anderson. I mean, he is coming back healthy, and like I said, he's been in the rotation the past few years. A lot of these guys are really young, and so if you can have that veteran back and healthy, then that's something that you can very much look forward to. So I think that you're right. I think there are a lot of detractors out there saying, oh, the schedule's so hard. But again, if you can throw out five good starters, you have a chance to win every night. And their offense just seems to kind of scrap it together. I mean, you know, there's Josh Reddick has made a big splash. He's had some power this year. He has 28 home runs and a mid-70s in RBIs. He's been a huge factor. And, you know, if they can cobble it together, I don't know if they'll be able to overtake the Rangers, but I certainly think that they're in good shape for the wild card as well.
Absolutely. And speaking of that wild card, coming in a little further behind are the Tigers. Now, the Tigers, who everybody vaunted as, you know, a team that might waltz to a division crown, are struggling, and they trail the White Sox by two games. They did beat the White Sox last night. Obviously, a huge three-game set right now. But the Tigers, they have to win this division, right? There's no way they can get in this wild card mix with all those teams ahead of them.
I don't think that they're getting in the wild card mix. And a lot of people are saying, why are the Detroit Tigers not making the playoffs? You know, they have a dominant one in Verlander. They have a few other pitchers. Fister's pretty good. Scherzer can strike some guys out. And they obviously have some big bats in the rotation with Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera. Honestly, their downfall in the past few weeks and all season has been defense. Their defense is really bad, and that's one of the hallmarks of a playoff team. I mean, you know, they say it all the time in the NFL. I don't know if it's true anymore. But in baseball, defense is very important and definitely helps out your pitching staff a lot in stressful situations.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And the White Sox right now really clicking on all cylinders. A guy we haven't talked about is Alex Rios, who really was emerging as kind of a studly young player a couple of years ago, a guy who could hit for power, steal bases, play some defense. And this year, really having a bounce-back year, hitting over 300 with some pop, and there's a big reason why that team is right there. But I agree. I mean, the Tigers, this is a team that was, it just wasn't really built the right way. It was kind of thrown together, and, you know, they relied on a lot of guys who maybe had big years last year that weren't going to repeat, like Alex Avila, not really your five-hitter, and although they have two of the best in the AL, we'll get to that in a little while. Little teaser for you concerning the lineups, but the
Ooh,
Tigers
tease
lineup.
Tease me, Asa. Tease me.
But anyway, enough with the American League, the junior circuit. enough of them junior boys. Let's get out to the National League, and since I'm out here out west, I will talk about the NL West, and the Giants have opened up a 6-game lead on the LA Dodgers, the Yankees West, the team who didn't care, who was throwing caution to the wind, anything to get that championship. Hey, Dodgers, you got to get to the postseason first before you can chase that championship. It looks like the Giants might have this locked up.
Yeah, they definitely have it locked up. And once again, consistency in the rotation. Every night, they're throwing out a good pitcher. They're keeping themselves in ball games. And, I mean, Buster Posey is kind of making a late push to be a sentimental MVP. I mean, he's hitting, I think, like 320 since the All-Star. No, maybe 380 since the All-Star break and 320 overall.
Yeah, right.
So he's having a really good year. And, yeah, like you said, and like I said earlier with the Dodgers, there's a lot of big names and a lot of pieces there. But you can't just throw a team together and hope that there's chemistry and hope that all the pieces fit. And I know that the Dodgers are excited about having new ownership and having all this money, but we've seen Yankees teams and Red Sox teams and plenty of Mets teams in the past that have taken on all this payroll trying to build a fan base, and then it kind of collapses later. You can only keep paying players so much money. So that's more long-term, I guess. Short-term, I think LA has a decent chance at the wild card. I think that they're very dangerous if they get there because of Clayton Kershaw, but I don't think they're touching their Giants.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And you did talk about the Giants pitching, and I do want to point out that while they do have a deep rotation and over the course of the year, that's what they really lean on. Lately, two guys who have been really dependable in their rotation have struggled. Ryan Vogelsong has really hit a wall after such a surprise breakout season last year. The late bloomer was repeating his incredible performance this year and was in the top five in ERA for most of the year, I think led the National League at one point. He's been getting roughed up. And Madison Bumgarner has been having some struggles. Even Matt Cain hasn't been his sharpest. On the flip side, Tim Lincecum has righted the ship a little bit. That's always good to see for Giants fans. And you would think, even though we were talking about a couple weeks ago with how miserable he was, would he even start a playoff game? You'd think a guy like Bochy, if Lincecum's the one who's throwing well at the end of the year, he's the guy who has the track record and could easily, you know, set himself up to be a postseason hero even after being a GOAT so long.
Yeah.
So much of this year.
Bochy's one of those old school guys. I could definitely see that happening. And I mean, maybe you're right about Lincecum. And if you are going to get hot at some point during the year, now is the exact right time. They're really dangerous in that, when you get into the playoffs. And as I said, so would the Dodgers be with Clayton Kershaw. There's also a lot of wild card teams in the Central. The Pirates have been in it all year. The Cardinals have been in it all year. But Milwaukee is now starting to play themselves into it a little bit. And the Central making very interesting in the NL wild card.
Yeah, they certainly are. And the Braves playing a team from the Central tonight, the Brewers that you were talking about. And Braves
big game.
Up 2-0. Yeah, trying to salvage a game in this series. But the Brewers could nose themselves in there, although the Reds definitely have this division locked up. Their magic number is down to 10, so all they need is combination of 10 of their, or, you know, 10, a combination between their wins and St. Louis Cardinals losses that amounts to 10, and they win the division. But definitely some quality in that division. And, you know, the Pirates, while they're falling off a little bit, just 2.5 behind the Cardinals, just 2.5. I was thinking about an interesting dynamic, which is this. The Braves, unlike many years, finish the season against an NL Central opponent, which happens to be the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Interesting.
Now, imagine a situation where the Los Angeles Dodgers lead, have the second wild card spot at the end of the year. The Pittsburgh Pirates are a game behind them in third place, and St. Louis has fallen off, although not necessarily what I think will happen, but just a hypothetical. The Braves go to Pittsburgh for a 3-game set where, if they sweep the Pirates or win 2 out of 3, they have to face Kershaw and the Dodgers. But if somehow Pittsburgh beats them, they might actually face Pittsburgh in that one game. Crazy situation.
It is a crazy situation. It's weird to be able to dictate what's going to happen, and those are big decisions to make. But, I mean, that's the time of year when, you know, you can say everyone's been playing 161 games. We got a lot of guys that are injured. We got to rest up for the playoff because we already have it locked up. And, you know, maybe find yourself to, you know, where you're playing the Pirates instead of the Dodgers or the Cards. It's definitely a lot less intimidating. And, you know, of course, the Braves would never say that they would do that. They would just say that they're playing to win every night. But I'm just happy that the Braves have had a better September this year than last year. The offense hasn't shown a ton of signs of life in the past week or two, but we still have a pretty good overall record. And it's nice to see the pitching step up a little bit and that we're actually a little bit in control of the wild card race when it last year it felt like it was slipping from our fingertips.
Yeah, it really did. And the Braves don't have any excuses this year. They have a lot of cupcake games at the end of the year. You know, they face the Marlins, who at this point are just, you know, trying out different guys from their low A ball team to see who can play some base and ball, and some games at the Mets. Though the Mets, I think, are a pretty competitive team. No matter what,
they can throw some good pitchers out there.
No matter what, you might have to face all right, Vicky. But the Braves, yeah, like you said, they're in control. I'm not going to use the term control of their own destiny because that's not what it is. But the offense has to get it going. They have to. We talked about this. If you look at the overall numbers, you say this is such a solid offense across the board. We've got run producers. You know, not one superstar, but a lot of people in the 70s in RBIs and other guys. You know, Martin Prado has 60 something RBIs hitting out of the two hole, but they just throw clunkers up there and not at a good times.
Yeah, especially if this team gets behind early, you start to see guys grip the bat a little bit harder and swing for the fences, and that's not what they need to do. We have a complete lineup, 1-8, just about every night, maybe 1-7, because Giannis is in there on most nights.
Well, no, isn't Simmons back?
He actually sprained his ankle, and he's out for the next few days, unfortunately.
Oh, Jesus.
But he was back for a game or two. But, yeah, if we can just keep the chain moving, get guys on base, that's all you really need to do to wear a pitching staff down and to score some runs. I mean, last week, you know, we won two games in a row without scoring an earned run in either game. We won both 1-0, had very few hits. I mean, it's nice that the pitching has stepped up, but with the collapse last year, you know, it is a little bit scary. But as we said, we're in a nice position. One team that's in our division that we really haven't talked about in a while, except at the trade deadline, is the Philadelphia Phillies. And as of today, the Phillies are only 3.5 out in the wild card race, which is seemingly crazy, but the Cardinals and the Pirates have been fucking around lately. And the Phillies, of course, are throwing out Halliday, Hamels, and Lee 3 out of every 5 days. Do you think that they can play their way into the wild card?
You know, as much as I don't want to believe it, I think they have a decent chance. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of scary.
I really do. You know, it's hard just mathematically to leapfrog 3 teams. You know, that's just difficult, just how the math breaks down. But you're right. They have those 3 pitchers. People are healthy on offense. And while they did gut the team a little bit this year, they still can swing the bats. And they are still a veteran team. You know, I'm sure the mood in that clubhouse hasn't changed 1 inch this year. You know, I mean, trading Victorino, he's a nice piece, but they can still win some games.
Throwing Utley, Howard, and Rollins at you, and while those names may not scare you as much as they did a few years ago, they still know how to win games. And if you look at their schedule from here on out, they go to at Houston, they should sweep, but at least win 2, and then they go at the Mets, they run into a little bit of a rough stretch at Atlanta and Washington, and end the season with Miami. So that's a pretty favorable schedule from here on out.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So I wouldn't be shocked if they snuck in, and that would be, well, maybe a scary game on the surface. I think the Braves would be very comfortable with that because, as my memory serves me, we've really handled at least Halliday and Lee this year. Maybe not Hamels, but I think we've really taken care of the Phils this year,
yeah,
our old nemesis.
Well, one thing that the Braves are going to need, and this is something that we've touched on in the past, but I'm going to expound on a little bit here, is for Michael Bourne to play well. There's been a lot of talk in Atlanta lately. But basically, Michael Bourne has played in 81 of our wins, and in those wins, he's hitting .320 with a .403 on base percentage, and in the 61 losses, he's hitting .221 with a .269 on base percentage. So you can see as he goes, so does our offense goes. And when you have him on base and the threat of him taking extra bases and scoring from first base with Prado and the rest of those guys coming up, we're just such a much more dangerous team. But as you and I both noted, there's been a lot of bad at-bats and a lot of strikeouts lately, and that's something that's really going to need to change if we're going to make any noise in the playoffs.
Yeah, his batting average has been pretty much in free fall. He's down to .278, which is not bad by any stretch, but he's pretty much right around .300, .310 the whole year. He struck out 138 times this year. Coming into tonight, probably struck out tonight too. That's just unacceptable. He almost has as many strikeouts as hits. I mean, he does have a lot of walks, but this guy, you know, he was so important to the Braves, and you just saw it. You saw it at the beginning of the year, and it felt like this year the Braves offense, you know, it took a while to get them warmed up, but in the middle of the year when we started swinging the bats in June and July, you know, this looked like an offense that could get things done. This looked like an offense that would have the 4-run inning, the 5-run inning, and then tack on one in the next two innings like Joe Simpson always talks about. Like, it felt like that team, and it hasn't felt like that. And I don't know what to point to, you know. I mean, all sorts of streaky hitters on this team. You know, you got to – I mean, I have to put something on the coaching staff. I don't know if it's the hitting coach or Freddie, but – you know, these guys need to have more confidence. Sometimes it feels like there's just desperation sitting in, and the camera pans over to that dugout when we're down 3-0 in the sixth, and just hang dog. But you're right, when Michael Bourne gets on base, when him and Prado are both on base, you know, you're going to just score runs by accident with those guys on base. And if you happen to get hits in the middle of the order, it turns into a huge inning. You know, it just happened so quickly.
The disappointing thing is, I mean, he has so much speed. And in the first half of the season, when he had that really great batting average, he struck out once every 4.8 at-bats. And in the second half, he struck out once every 3.5. So that's a huge swing. And he struck out, I think, twice last night and at least once tonight. So that's something that just can't happen. All you got to do is put the ball in play when you got that kind of speed. And, you know, if there are guys on base, you know, at least you can maybe make a defense, make an error, keep an inning going, eliminate a double play, anything like that. So it's going to be interesting. But there are other teams that also have other questions. What's going on with the Reds and their bullpen?
Well, Aroldis Chapman, the Cuban missile, has been having a little trouble with that flaming fireball of a left arm of his. Yes, it's flaming. And they've actually sat him down, which they can do. It's not necessarily a cause for any panic in Queen City, but I think it might be a little bit bigger of a deal than people are making. This is a guy who relies on throwing the ball really, really fast. And he also relies on getting command. His last few outings, he has had no command. He's been walking people, and the velocity has been way down, which is still the mid-90s. But
yeah, I think his fastball is down like 5 miles an hour. And, I mean, yeah, that just doesn't happen. So I think that's a huge cause for concern, and that would really hurt. I mean, you know, he was a guy who was, you know, probably him and Kimbrel are the best relievers in the league. The Reds need every advantage they can get at the pitching aspect, so that would hurt a lot.
Yeah, and that was being touted as one reason why people were picking the Reds to make a run in the postseason. But all of a sudden, if Sean Marshall is your closer, well, he's solid, and he was brought up in the Cubs to be a late-inning reliever, you know, just not as reliable. And you have Jonathan Broxton then getting a lot of high-leverage innings, another guy who's struggled with control problems. So, you know, could be a big deal, but they're going to be able to sit him down, so he'll have all the rest he needs. But, you know, he is from Cuba. Probably some questions with his age. He could be older than he says. You know, it could be a case of he's wearing down a little bit. Maybe it's been a while since he had this long of a year throwing this hard, you know, every second day. So Aroldis Chapman, sit down. The Reds just hope that he'll be ready come the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me feel a lot better about how we've managed Craig Kimbrell's innings as a Braves fan this year. He's pitched a lot less innings. The offense being better has definitely allowed us to not pitch him in as many games. But, this was the time of year when Kimbrell was kind of not necessarily breaking down because he was still very highly efficient, but when he was not quite as sharp last year. So it's good to see that we've maybe managed our ways away from that same situation year after year.
Yeah, it does. And this year's bullpen, what a job by Frank Wren. It was almost...
Yeah, kind of an unsung group, honestly, but they've
been
great.
Kind of like minimalist painting, you know? Like, he just said, less is more this year. Let's keep what we had intact. And even though he suffered from Venter's falling off a ton, Moylan is now back, which is fun. Avilan has been worked in enough that I think there's some trust with Avilan. He's got really good stuff.
Yeah, he's been consistent.
As kind of the third lefty in the pen, he gets some good matchup situations that he has a good chance to succeed in. And
we had one signing,
Chad
Durbin, yeah, and he's
been
really
so reliable. And you know the Nationals wish they had him. They cut him in spring training. What are you doing, Nationals? The Braves are happy about that. And it's Chad Durbin who leads the Braves in appearances.
Wow.
Which is how it should be, eating up the innings. And, like you said, credit the management of games and perhaps the offense at times for creating situations where Durbin can pitch with a 5-run lead instead of Kimbrel pitching with a 2-run lead.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I think we're in a much better position this year. And speaking of the playoffs, to high acclaim, a week ago we ranked the playoff rotations. What say you? We take a look at the offense as the teams head down the stretch.
Offense is so much fun. Pitching is obviously take center stage in the playoffs. So much depends on the pitcher. But as we saw in the World Series last year, anything can happen. Those two teams just went apeshit all over the ball, all over each other. And so we're going to rank the lineups, power rank the lineups. And this is based on what's going on right now. We might present these rankings later in the season. They could change a little bit. But for the teams who have a shot at the playoffs, so
chicks
we are going
to dig the long ball, and people love rankings, so we're going to rank what chicks love.
What chicks love, and we're going to do the top eight, because after that is superfluous. And Travis and I got together on Powwowed, so these are composite rankings, and we'll discuss our process. What say you, we start with the senior circuit?
It is the senior circuit, and it deserves the most respect, and therefore it shall go first.
It shalleth. The National League.
Yeah, the National League. Let's start off. It was a tough decision for us. We debated much about who to give the top spot in the National League, but I think you got to give respect to the St. Louis Cardinals. Got some overall studs that have been there and done that. Of course, Carlos Beltran, Matt Holliday headlining. Great bats with Yadier Molina, reigning World Series MVP David Freese. It's hard to escape this lineup, and it got our top spot.
It absolutely did. I want to talk about another guy. Alan Craig has really emerged. He missed some games earlier in the year. And in just 100 games this year, he has 20 homers, 76 RBIs, 30 doubles, and he's hitting .300. And that lineup is just so deep. It just keeps going. You got guys like Matt Adams, Matt Carpenter, not really highly touted prospects, all of them, some minor league sluggers, but guys, and they have a deep bench right now. And going into the playoffs, that's a scary team in any series, even though they're pitching this year, maybe not on par with in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. That offense really can carry you. And just like great pitching, it can keep you in a ball game. And you don't have to be as intimidated when you go up against someone's ace. You're right. The rotation isn't as strong as recent years. Wainwright, although I do trust him, he's been a little up and down the stretch. They get my top spot and our top spot. The second spot goes to a fellow NL Central team with a certain one of the chosen people, the Hebrew Hammer, Ryan Braun, leading the way for the Milwaukee Brewers, who come in at number two.
The Milwaukee Brewers in at number two, and that you know, some of that is based on how hot they've been lately to actually get their way into this playoff picture. And the offense has really carried them. And they did lose Prince Fielder, but they turned around and signed Aramis Ramirez, who's quietly having a really solid year for my fantasy team. And
year after year, he puts up good numbers.
A reliable player, and always in the NL Central, bouncing around from the Pirates to the Cubs. Now the Brew Crew. But, you know, 44 doubles this year, hitting .297, wow. 23 homers and 91 RBIs. That's a .363 on base and a .532 slugging for almost a 900 OPS. So that's pretty sweet. Ryan Braun, definitely an MVP candidate. Corey Hart's been feeling some injuries lately, but if they can get him going,
he's got
that
a lot
middle
of
the lineup is pretty sweet. And, you know, I think the Braves have a chance at this spot. You know, I think this is a close call for me because I think the Braves lineup is deeper. But, you know, I think the star power of Braun in the middle definitely radiates out like a six-pointed star.
Well said. And, yeah, I agree with you. You know, I think that
he's a six-tool player.
Because of those superstars, I think they maybe got the nod for me. But Atlanta's definitely right behind them. I mean, as I said earlier, 1-7, you're looking at a quality at bat. You're looking at a guy who can hit for average and hit for a little bit of power. The guys who have really been struggling for us, Dan Uggla and Brian McCann, have been turning it around lately, which is good to see. As I said, if you're going to heat up, now's the time to do it, fellas. So good to see them getting hot. And I think Atlanta has a potent offense and comes in at number 3 in our rankings.
Now's the time to get cooking, Bravos. Yeah, that I think it is time to get hot. And Jason Hayward hit another masher tater tonight. And
he destroyed that ball.
Almost took somebody's head off in the second deck in right field in Milwaukee. But when people throw him high fastballs, it's brutal. It's like an R-rated, X-rated movie, and the ball just flies out of there. And I love him in the three-hole. Man, I think that's given the lineup so much stability with Chipper hitting right behind him. And
if
Michael Bourne gets going, Brian McCann's heating up, you know, they just need to sustain. That's all. Just maintain and you know, have a little confidence. Have that swagger knowing that, you know, you failed. Okay, so you've had some big gaffes. You know, you've had some offers. You've had some games where you really look futile, but doesn't mean anything. You could quickly turn that around. We're a team that loves the long ball. That can always help you score in bunches. So look for the Braves to crank it up a little bit hotter for the stretch run.
All right. Our next spots were very highly contested. We're still looking at some good offenses at this point. But let's stay in division for number 4. Let's go with the Washington Nationals, another team without really a superstar, but a very, very deep lineup.
Yeah, I like that lineup. It's very quietly turned into a very potent one. And Ian Desmond is a guy who has really just caught fire this year and just learned how to hit and hit for power. And at shortstop, that's a huge plus. Jason Worth has responded, come back from injury.
He's been good on the leadoff. He's been getting on the base, yeah.
And Ryan Zimmerman lately has found the power stroke. He's been bopping home runs. You know they got Mike Morse in the middle there, just quietly mashing taters. You know, Danny Espinosa is no easy out. The lineup is very deep, and I haven't even talked about the teenage phenom yet.
Yeah, that's true. Bryce Harper has had quite a resurgence. And another guy I want to give a shout-out to is Adam LaRoche, a guy having a really quiet year, but he has almost 30 home runs and 92 RBIs. So he's been kind of carrying that offense. But, yeah, everyone loves to talk about Bryce Harper. He's got all the tools. He's been hitting for some power lately, getting some hits, getting on base like they need him to. And everyone in Washington is excited. Who would you put at number 5? Still some good offenses left to go.
Yeah, well, I'll bring us home from here. Number 5, I think I'd have to put the star power of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Even though a lot of stars that have faded a little bit, a lot of guys that may be performing below what people think their talent level is, I just think the sum of those parts is actually pretty darn good. And while they're not going to chase down the Giants, they do have a chance to get into that wild card game. They do have the single best pitcher, I think, in the National League that anyone could throw in that game. And, you know, so they have a good chance to actually make it to a division series. And I like this lineup. I mean, Hanley Ramirez has really turned it on since joining the Dodgers. I think it was a horrible situation in Miami. It was only getting worse bringing Ozzy in. You know, Hanley's got talent. He needs to be put in line a little bit, to be honest, but he's got power. And, you know, Adrian Gonzalez is, he's a mystery to me because I just don't understand where the power is, you know, but he's still a very, very quality first baseman, especially in the National League West.
Yeah. I mean, if I say the names, you know, Matt Kemp, Adrian Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez, Andre Ethier, in the same lineup, but that's pretty intimidating. But you're right. Adrian Gonzalez, I don't know what's happening to him, but hitting .227 without power for LA, like, what's going on, dude? You're a good hitter. You're a .300 hitter with power. And then Victorino, he's a veteran guy that's been there before, won some playoff games. Hanley Ramirez, still a little bit disappointing for me because I don't think he should be hitting .260, but he has hit 10 home runs in 44 games since coming over. So, you know, they definitely have a lot of forces in their lineup. And we'll see if they can gain some of that chemistry going down the stretch.
Yeah, they brought the Flying Hawaiian over, too. They definitely have that name value. But maybe Matt Kemp can go on one of his classic month-long tears. After that, we got the Dodgers coming in at number five. After that, the Cincinnati Reds, who a lot of people out there might think is pretty low, and maybe we're a little low on the Reds today. Maybe we're just feeling a little blue.
You're bullshit, Cincinnati.
Maybe you're full of it. Maybe you're Joey Votto and a bunch of clowns. But Cincinnati probably has the best pure hitter in the National League in their lineup. Then they have Jay Bruce right behind him, who's been bopping this year. I think he's third in the National League in home runs. So why are they this low, Travis?
I don't know. They just don't really do it for me. I mean, there's a lot of deep lineups. They do have those bats, and they have Brandon Phillips. But after that, you know, Zach Cozart's having an okay year, and Scott Rowland's a good name, but they're just not giving me enough depth. And Jay Bruce is one of those guys where if he's hot and he's going on a tear, then he can absolutely carry you on his shoulders. But if he's not, then he's not. So I think that Cincinnati maybe doesn't have enough pieces to be in the upper echelon of the teams we're talking about here.
That's fair. That's a fair point. You know, and definitely a team that's going to make the playoffs. They're going to win their division, so they're going to have a good chance to prove all of us wrong. And I want to talk about another guy who I think has quietly entered the Rookie of the Year discussion. That's Todd Frazier for Cincinnati. He doesn't get everyday playing time. He was for a while when Scott Rowland was actually sidelined, but Dusty Baker is a classic old-school manager who goes with old guys. That's what old-school means. You just go with old guys. and Todd Frazier has 18 home runs, 62 RBIs, a .283 batting average, a .516 slugging percentage, and only 115 games. So really making the most of his opportunity, playing third base, first, and left field. A versatile guy, and I would say, you know, I mean, numbers-wise, that's clearly better than Bryce Harper.
Yeah,
it is. He is 26, so maybe not as good of a story, but...
Yeah, I'm sure that Bryce Harper will probably get it just so that they can get the hype and publicity machine going, but, you know, there are some other good names out there. Wade Miley's had a pretty good year, and I actually didn't know that his numbers were that good, but that's a very impressive job, and I guess adds to the depth of their lineup, although they'd probably have to stick him somewhere other than third because, as you said, those old-school guys are staying in the game.
Yeah, they really are. And at number seven, we have the Philadelphia Phillies. And
crazy that we're talking about them, but they're in
there. It's crazy. They're in it. And this lineup, you know, it's got some age. It's got some miles on it. But, you know, I feel like on a good day, this lineup could still rake.
Yeah, I mean, you're throwing out that trio of Utley, Howard, and Rollins, and they certainly don't have the stat lines that you would expect from recent years, but they're still guys that have been there and performed at the highest levels at the most appropriate time, so they're guys that you feel like you can rely on them. They traded away a lot of offense. They got rid of Victorino, who obviously ended up in L.A., they got rid of Hunter Pence, who ended up in San Francisco. So, yeah, you feel like they can still do it for you. They're kind of near the bottom here, but, you know, they're better than the Pirates.
They sure are, and that is consolation. The Pirates have, you know, MVP candidate Andrew McCutchen in the middle of that order, and not a whole heck of a lot else. They have the real deal, Neil Walker, who's one of the sweeter swinging second basemen in the senior circuit. But, you know, just not a lot of depth there. And that's why we were talking about Pittsburgh as the team, you know, who we would like to face in that final. And finally, San Francisco. We really struggle with San Francisco. You know, we talked about Buster Posey in the middle of that lineup, but, you know, they're just so cold and streaky.
He's no young Andrew McCutchen, I'll say that.
Definitely isn't. I might have to put them in there between Cincinnati and Philadelphia at seventh.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Actually, you know, the addition of Hunter Pence helps them and hurts Philly, bumps them down. So I think that's a good spot for San Fran, actually. And you got a little Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, but he's been real weak this year over at MLB Trade Rumors.
But he's fat, so it's adorable.
Yeah, but he only has 8 home runs and can't really play defense at third base anymore. It's kind of rough. Yeah, it's adorable, but apparently Bruce Bochy had to sit down with him to have a talk about his swing with him and the hitting coaches. So a little sit down. I wonder who brought the donuts. Over to the American League, and Travis, there are some powerhouse lineups in this league. Of all the swaggerific powerhouse lineups, who occupies our top spot?
When you're talking about swag, you're talking about New York. It's a lineup where they have good bats, and I'ma stop singing. But yeah, the Yankees are number one. You expect them to be there every year because of the payroll, and they have a lot of it there. I mean, Robinson Cano has been a beast all year. Curtis Granderson, A-Rod is coming back. I mean, Derek Jeter, the names don't stop. And even if Teixeira is out for an extended period of time, which it looks like he might be, they still have a ton of depth at every position, as you would expect them to.
Yeah, they have such an incredible early 2000s all-star team. It's lovely. I was looking at their lineup tonight, and at the bottom of the lineup, I have Raul Ibanez, Eric Chavez, and Ichiro Suzuki. I mean, this team just keeps going. They have Andrew Jones.
It's crazy.
You know, this lineup can
you
really
just wind back the clock.
It really can hit. and I'm sure Teixeira will be back by the playoffs. You know, though, they're going to really have to claw for that playoff. It's not a guaranteed spot for them.
True.
But this lineup can mash. And I think they get the top spot over Texas because Texas just does not have the same level of intimidation for me this year. They just don't. And Josh Hamilton started the year as good as any player has ever started a year, but since then has been very human. And the rest of that lineup, while Adrian Beltre is easily the best third baseman in baseball. I mean, just having an incredible year offensively. You know, after that, it gets a little bare. You know, Elvis.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Beltre's been going nuts. And I think that Josh Hamilton reminds me of Matt Kemp. I think Kemp's is a little more exaggerated. With his crazy numbers, he only ended up with 18 home runs and 9 stolen bases because of all the injuries. But, yeah, I mean, last year you had Mike Napoli going apeshit and, you know, all sorts of crazy things with their offense and their lineup, which was, you know, really hard to face and the main reason they got to the World Series. But, yeah, this year it is down a little bit. It probably has something to do with Josh Hamilton.
Yeah, he had a pretty good month of August. He hit 7 home runs with a ton of RBIs, 28, and he hit .310. But sandwiched around that are couple of months where in June he hit .223, in July he hit .177, and so far 10 games into September he's only hitting .189. So really cooling down, and you know, a guy that is in line for just a huge contract, and there's no telling how much money he could really get. on the free agent market this year. But, you know, that Texas lineup is still real good. They still have guys coming off the bench like David Murphy, who would be maybe this, you know, number five hitter in a lot of other teams' lineups.
Yeah, and you're looking at a guy like Nelson Cruz, too, who has a lot of trouble staying healthy, but when he does, just absolutely mashes the ball.
Yeah, and we saw as in the playoffs last year, he could just turn a series around with his bat. Number three, the fight in number three, got to give it to the Baltimore Orioles.
The Orioles!
That sweet swinging lineup is getting it done. The Orioles are still defying odds. They are still winning with a negative run differential. And that's mostly because the pitching staff has allowed so many runs because the offense does score. And they have a lot of guys that are coming into their own this year. And that's a good year to be going to the playoffs. They have Adam Jones feeling it. I got his long-term extension. He's playing center field like a boss and hitting for power this year. Matt Wieters putting it together at the plate and you know, probably gets a lot of credit for handling that staff. And then a lot of other guys that kind of were cast-offs from a lot of other teams and have migrated to the Orioles and have kind of come together to make this really potent lineup.
Yeah, I've said it once and I'll say it again. I do have some trepidation putting a lineup with Nate McLaughlin at this high, but you're right. The rest of the lineup, they do have really good bats throughout. Look at a guy like Chris Davis who has kind of revived his career here. He's got 25 home runs and 68 RBIs. J.J. Hardy has had a good year. As you said, Matt Wieters, who has a great job behind the plate, he's got 73 RBIs. That's great for a catcher. Yeah, there's a lot of different options. They got some pop. And Nick Markakis, I think he's still leading the league in hits since the All-Star break. So, yeah, they got a lot of bats, and I like them in the three spot. A lineup with more names and a little less production would come in at number four. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, Trumbo, Trout, and Pujols. Three very intimidating names, but Trout and Trumbo have kind of cooled down, and Pujols has had a disappointing year. How do you feel about the Angels who come in at the four spot in our offensive rankings?
I don't feel great about the Angels, to be honest. I think there's a case for potentially one of the NL Central teams even being ahead of them. You know, I do think the potency of having Mike Trout and Pujols in the same lineup and hitting within two spots of each other is really hard to overcome. But, you know, it's a lineup that has underperformed. It's a team that's underperformed. You know, and the supporting cast is really a lot of guys on their last legs. You know, there's not a lot of youth. There's not a lot of exuberance in that lineup outside of Mike Trout. You got Kendrys Morales, who's putting together a pretty good year, playing on a knee made out of God knows what. And you got Vernon Wells playing out the end of a horrible contract. And Torii Hunter's
actually hitting .300 this year. He's having a pretty solid year.
That's impressive. That's very impressive. You know, so I think they are in the spot of the rankings with their star power. You know, but about a, you know, top to bottom, the lineup just feels about right at the fourth spot, I guess, right outside the middle range.
Middle of the pack.
Yeah.
Middle of the pack. Well, speaking of the AL Central, AL Central takes up the next two spots in our lineup, and it was hard to pick between the Tigers and the White Sox. But we ended up going at Tigers at number five. Just as it was hard to turn down Trout and Pujols, it's also pretty hard to turn down Miguel Cabrera and Prince Fielder.
Yeah, I couldn't turn them down for nothing.
For nothing.
Those Bash brothers, you know, they – I mean, Cabrera, Fielder is solid. I mean, he's very good, but Cabrera
Miguel Cabrera
is on another level.
A crazy career.
Miguel Cabrera is like a career 320 hitter, and he's now just an every year 30 home run guy. I mean, you can't say enough about him. Austin Jackson, too, has really broken out, and a guy who was all tools at one point, a guy who was traded from the Yankees for Curtis Granderson in a deal that, you know, everybody declared the Yankees the winners immediately. But this year, Curtis Granderson, and he's only 25. It's his third full year. He's hitting .305 at the top of that lineup. He's slugging .488. He's a tiny center fielder. He's got 14 home runs, 10 triples lead the league, 23 doubles. he's a beast. 89 runs scored, which might
setting
be leading the league. Say what?
I said he's setting the table.
He's setting the table, and he's playing good defense in center. So I think that Tigers lineup, they can put up some runs, but they have struggled at times this year to find consistency, much like your hometown Atlanta Braves.
That's right. Well, bringing us up to the next spot, as I teased earlier, is another AL Central team, the White Sox, a team with a lot of pop. You're looking at guys like Adam Dunn, guys like Paul Konerko, and these are guys that have put up numbers for years now. And then they also have some youth in that lineup. They're starting a young Gordon Beckham from UGA and Alexi Ramirez at shortstop. The White Sox have a pretty good lineup up and down, and it's almost a little bit surprising to find them at six.
Yeah, it is surprising. And Alex Reyes is a guy who's had a great bounce back year. He's hitting over 300, and after all those years in Toronto and some really poor years in Chicago, I guess he's at 293, but 23 home runs, 85 RBIs, right in the thick of that order.
Got 20 stolen bases, too.
Hey, 2020, not bad. And that White Sox team could do some damage. Look for them to be there in October. Coming in at number seven, the Tampa Bay Rays. We were just kind of deciding who not to pick for the last spot, more than deciding who to give seven to between these two. And I think the only edge the Rays have is a little bit of been there, done that, as my partner likes to say, star power when it comes down to the end of the season. Talking about Evan Longoria last year launching that low home run over the low left field wall. But neither of these teams really scare teams very much with the bat.
It's true. It's definitely true. And they're boring, so let's not talk about them. Let me ask you a question.
Ask it.
Would you rather do a tweet child of mine, or do you want to jump into America's new favorite sport of NFL football?
I think we should probably do a tweet child of mine because that's what the people love, isn't it?
Done. She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories. Where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest sky as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes. And then
I... Nice vibrato, buddy. All right, Alice, let's go.
No, Alice, no.
Nice vibrato, buddy.
Nice vibrato, buddy.
Hope I could say that to my son one day.
Ugh. Well, I'll lead us off. My tweet of the week, my tweet child of mine, is Jason Stark. We haven't talked about him yet, so I had to bring it up. Quote, Chris Medlin's season is ridiculous. Allowed a total of 5 earned runs in first 8 starts. Only pitcher to do that since Fernando Mania in 81 in Greinke.
Wow.
Pretty crazy.
Wow. Fernando Valenzuela, that's a... He kind of reminds me of Fernando, too, just because they're both little pint-sized dudes. But
they got baby faces.
That's awesome. If only he had that crazy twirling delivery like Nando. My tweet of the week is from a guy, Rob Delaney, who I actually saw live in person down at the Herps Theater in San Francisco a couple weeks ago.
How was it?
It was awesome. He was really funny. He's quite energetic. And he just, he connects with the audience so well. I looked over and then there were some, older people there. I thought I might only see college students, but, everybody was laughing and even people who were trying not to laugh. I saw people, on certain jokes, their face would react and say, oh, I shouldn't laugh at this, but they couldn't help themselves because he tells truths and they cut to the core, which is why I have this. Tweet for you tonight, tweet child of mine, and this one is at Mitt Romney. It says, at Mitt Romney, take a day off. Why don't I swing by and we can flip through some Land's End catalogs and close a factory via Skype or something?
That's hilarious.
And I think you guys, if you're into him as I am, you should check out the Mitt and Rob online comic because some
Tumblr
has taken to illustrating these tweets. It's a lot of fun. Well, that was fun. Why don't you get the NFL cranked up? And I think that means our special guest.
I be on it all night, man. I be on it all day. Straight up pimp. If you want me, you can find me in the air. I gotta turn back round and tell these crows that I am the ace and I can trick. That's just the way it goes. I be on that shit that I had you on that I don't want no more. At this time I need all my free show to get down on the flow. If you claim to rep your...
How is it going? We bring to you, as you well know, Carson Phillips Spots, expert NFL analyst and regular on Foul Territory. Of course, find us on Twitter at @Foul_Territory. Carson, how's it going after week one of NFL football?
Week one, guys. NFL's back. No more mini camps. No more OTAs. No more preseason. We're here. It's the real deal, and I can't be happier.
Feels good in my man area.
Feels good in my man area as well. I glued my backside to a couch for about 14 hours on Sunday.
Wow.
Beautiful day outside. Didn't quite make it out because we have red zone here at Duck Manor. Taking advantage of every single minute of NFL action on Sunday. Guys, to start off, a lot of eyes were on the NFL this weekend, obviously, but I think even more eyes were on the NFL lock-in, which is our fantasy league. And to get things started, I wanted to give a quick shout-out, quick game analysis for a huge matchup last week. Sean Harrington and the Mosses Rocket Sauce taking on Porn on the Cob, the defending champions. Mosses Rocket Sauce and Sean Harrington edging out the win 95.64 to Porn on the Cob 90.12.
Big upset.
Big upset. And you know, I think it comes down to some banter going on draft day. You know, Sean getting a lot of flack for drafting the Baltimore Ravens defense as high as he did, and they ended up getting him 18 points this past week. So that was a difference maker. So Porn on the Cob, you can go ahead and suck it.
Shout out to Andy Dalton. Redhead.
Ginger.
All right, guys. Well, let's talk about what happened in week one in real football. I think one of the biggest headlines for me is that three of the defending division champions in the NFC lost. The Giants lost to division rival Cowboys. The Packers lost to the very exciting RG3 and the Skins. And then the Saints lost to
the Skins, and we're going with the
Giants.
The
lost
Packers
to
the lost the 49ers.
Packers lost to the 49ers. That's what my brain was searching for.
Yeah.
So obviously, first game shouldn't overreact too much, but the NFL is a league in which there's a lot of turnover. You certainly don't want to go 0-2. Based on these week one performances, which of these teams do you guys think should be the most concerned going forward? Giants, Packers, or Saints?
To start things off, I'm going to go ahead and say the Aints, the Saints. I think that coming off the offseason that they had, losing a game at home against a team with starting a rookie quarterback, even though RG3 did some great things, I think that they should be, you know, they should have the most cause for panic. I know the Giants, on one hand, are used to slow starts, and the Packers, I think, just realize that San Fran is the real deal. That they're not, you know, a team to be dealt with lightly in the league this year. They have a great defense, and they show that. So, I don't think the Saints, in their transition stage, they should be most fearful for falling into a pit, you know, as the weeks go by.
You know, I think the Packers should be pretty worried, to be honest. You know, I think they did run into a really good team in San Francisco. And, you know, on another day, they might have had a better game against them. But that San Francisco team isn't perfect, and it exposed a lot of weaknesses with the Packers, including on that defense. It's so porous, and they really just don't have a run game. You know, again, that was against San Francisco, but we've seen that with them. They tried to bring Cedric Benson in. We'll see if that pans out. You know, I'm not buying it. And they have to turn around real quick, something we're going to talk about in a little while. They have a bruiser of a division game coming up, you know, that they need to prepare for. So I think it spells a little bit of trouble for them, especially if they happen to drop to 0-2.
Yeah, I mean, 0-1 isn't a huge deal, but 0-2 is a pretty big deficit, especially if you lose to the division rival that Carson thinks is going to take the division down in Chicago. I mean, I'll make the argument, I guess, for the Giants. You know, they lost to the Cowboys. A division loss is never good. And I think that the Cowboys and the Eagles are both going to be much improved this year, so it's going to be much harder for the Giants to overcome that slow start. But if I actually have to pick with my brain and not strategically, I'd probably go with the Saints. I think that, it's rough considering what they're overcoming. And, losing like that to a rookie quarterback at home, I think that that's bad news bears. But speaking of week two, there's a lot of storylines from week to week in the NFL, and there's a lot coming up this week. What do you guys think that the biggest games coming up this week?
For me, I think that the game that I have scheduled on my calendar this week coming up is the Baltimore-Philly game. I think we all know what Mike Vick did last week. The four interceptions. He did finish the game strong and led his team on a game-winning drive. But it was against the Browns, a team that isn't really known for having a formidable defense, a team that couldn't get things going offensively.
Yeah, maybe if Andy Dalton doesn't throw four picks, then Cleveland wins that game.
And that's something to definitely.
Or Brandon Whedon.
The one and the same. That was something that they need to work on going forward. The Baltimore Ravens, a team that showed they still have it on defense. Older guys like, Ray Lewis had 12 tackles. Ed Reed had the pick six, guys that have been around for a while, but they're still performing. And that offensive explosion, putting up 34 points, don't really expect that from a Ravens team, to be frank. So I think that the Eagles have a lot of concern moving forward. They struggle with a lesser opponent, and they have a lot on the table. Andy Reid's job, is on the table publicly. Michael Vick not knowing what the next step for him in his career. So I think that definitely be one to watch for the storylines coming up this week.
If you had to pick a winner coming out of this game, who do you think is going to come out between the Battle of the Birds?
I think that the Baltimore is ultimately going to take it. I just didn't see enough from the Eagles, offense last week. And I think that, the defense that they saw last week and the defense they see this week are going to be completely different. And then the Ravens will bring a significant amount of pressure and they'll be very stout on defense. So I think that they're going to be in for a tough road ahead.
And how good did Joe Flacco look? I hate to see it, but wow.
That offense looks dangerous.
I hate to see it, but I hate to say the same thing too, Asa. But people were surprised at how successful they were, on Sunday night. But excuse me, Monday night. But I'm not that surprised. If you look at the weapons around them with a great defense, Ray Rice is a guy who can do so many things for your offense, and you have Torrey Smith, a guy who just flies by people.
Runs with like cartoon legs. Like, you can't even see him.
It's like the Road Runner. It's crazy. And Anquan Boldin, a guy who was a perennial, Pro Bowler in Arizona.
He looked like his old self.
Definitely. And then
He really did.
Ed Dixon at tight end, a guy who is very athletic, tall, long, big target. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner, to be frank. But I guess just they're putting all the pieces together, so it should be an exciting year for the Ravens.
Absolutely. Travis, why don't you tell us about the game that you have circled on your calendar?
Well, speaking of exciting, burgeoning offenses, the Detroit Lions, very exciting offense last year, although they looked bad last week against the Rams, and this week they go up against the 49ers, which we've already talked about, had a great week one against the Packers, looked very good. I think they were up 23-7 at some point in the third quarter, so they were taking care of business against Green Bay. It's going to be a tough game for Detroit, and in their hyper-competitive division with Green Bay and Chicago, I mean, that's going to be rough stuff. And it's going to be a tough deal for the 49ers and Alex Smith to see if they can deal with that monster of a D-line, if they can deal with Domokong Su and Nick Fairley, Cliff Averill, and all those guys coming through. So, I think that would be another signature win. The 49ers would definitely become the team to beat at that point, even though it's very, very early in the season. And I also think it'll be interesting to see if Jim Schwartz and Jim Harbaugh are going to fight each other.
That's what I'm most excited for.
Yeah, Schwartz is a tiny dude, but he is very fiery, as we saw last year. Former linebacker.
Yeah, he was a spark plug right up in his face. That's a big game. If San Francisco can get that road win, especially, you know, I mean, a lot of people think they might run away with division, but never hurts to have an in-conference win over another team that might be right there at the end of the season. Travis, if you had to pick a winner, who are you going to go with?
It hurts me to say it because I love Matthew Stafford, but I got to go with the Niners. I think that defense is definitely going to be able to get enough stops. And then Detroit's a little bit porous on the defensive side, and they don't have a running game. I think they're too one-dimensional is the bottom line, and I think San Francisco comes out on top.
Fair enough. Well, my game that I have circled this week, and this is not the last one we'll talk about, guys. Don't worry. We're going to cover all of the exciting ones. But mine is New Orleans at Carolina. And this is a tale of two teams potentially on different trajectories, opposite trajectories, if you will. And New Orleans, we talked about, had a rough first week, got tossed around by the Redskins. And while the score was close, it didn't really feel close when I was watching it. Drew Brees was not Drew Brees. He was hurried. He didn't look super comfortable. They still have so many weapons on that offense. It's still a dirty team. You know, but like we've talked about, coaching matters. It really matters in the NFL. And, you know, Sean Payton being out, losing your defensive coordinator, that's going to take its toll. And they were gashed by a Redskins team. You know, Alfred Morris coming out of that backfield going for 96 yards.
The blue pill.
The blue pill. They got 153 on the ground on the Saints, and RG3 was reading that defense and, you know, just throwing all over them. And while that offense is potent, they really need to bounce back with this important divisional game. And for Carolina, really rough week one, lost to the Buccaneers. You know, not the way they want to start their Super Bowl bid. And Cam Newton threw two picks. He had decent numbers aside from that. He still went for 300 yards, as he always seems to do, but didn't really have any rushing game. No running game for Carolina whatsoever. Jonathan Stewart was out, but D'Angelo Williams went 6 carries for -1 yards. So that's pretty not impressive. And Cam Newton had 4 yards on 5 carries.
Wow.
This is against Tampa Bay. I mean, I know Tampa Bay has really put a lot of work into that defensive line, but, you know, hard to believe that you couldn't establish that whatsoever. So
bringing that Scarlet Knights defense to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. Both teams that need a win to stay competitive in this division.
One thing I will say about New Orleans' defense is that Spagnuolo is a vastly different coordinator, and I'm not sure that the personnel is going to fit. It's probably going to take some time. I think this is an interesting divisional game as well. Carson, do you have anything you want to add, or should we ask Asa for his pick?
I mean, like you guys said, I think that the storylines are all there, and you know, as I said earlier in the show, that I think the Saints have a lot to prove coming up in Week 2. Also, you know, for Cam Newton to avoid the sophomore slump label, he'll need to do some things for his team next week. But yeah, we can go ahead and take it to you, Asa. What is your pick?
You know, I see New Orleans bouncing back and taking this one. You know, I think it's probably going to be another high scoring affair. I don't think they're going to run away with it. Probably be competitive, but I could see it being in the 30s. You know, they still have such a potent offense, and I did draft Jimmy Graham, and watching him play, it is just unreal. When Drew Brees really needs to complete a pass and you just throw it in his general area, he can go get it over anybody. You know, and they're going to bounce back. You know, I think Carolina is pretty potent, and Cam should continue to improve. I don't think he's going to have a sophomore slump. I think he's probably too good for that. But I see Carolina pulling this one out, maybe 35-31.
All right, it's a high-scoring game.
Ooh, Andy gave us a score. Uh-huh. You can go to the bank in Vegas, which is called a casino on that one.
Speaking of high-potent offenses and interdivisional rivalries, a big game up for tomorrow night. It's the Bears and the Packers, NFC North showdown on NFL Network, for those of you who have it.
Yep.
Asa, huge game coming up. I'm going to go ahead and give you my thoughts on it. Like I said, I think the Bears are going to win the NFC North. You know, even though the Packers, you know, had a tough game last week at San Fran, I'm going to go ahead and say that the Pack do pull it out. I think that this is one of the games they will get on the Bears. But I just think that the Bears can afford to lose games and still win the division. You know, I think that Aaron Rodgers and, you know, Mike McCarthy won't lose two games back-to-back, you know, especially after the season they had last year. So I definitely think that the Bears can pull – excuse me, the Packers will pull this one out.
I will say that they have already won – already lost back-to-back games, and actually both games have been at home. The opening game of the season was at home, and the playoff game was at home. And actually they've lost three out of the last five because they lost to the Chiefs in week 14. So I'm actually going to go with Chicago on this one. They impressed me a lot in week one. I think it's all there. They're not one-dimensional. They have Matt Forte and Bush that can run the ball. They finally have some weapons for Jay Cutler, who can throw to Brandon Marshall, his buddy from his Denver days. And, of course, they have that classic Bears defense. And Devin Hester on special teams, I think they're the complete package. And I think they're going to leave the Packers searching after week two.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. I like the Packers to take this one. And it sounds like Greg Jennings might miss this game, which might be a little tough for Aaron Rodgers, but good for my fantasy team. I guess I should have drafted Jordy over him, bitch. But, yeah, I like that Chicago offense. And Alshon Jeffrey quietly having an 80-yard game in his first game. The big, slow man who can't run, but, you know, opposite Marshall. With Forte coming out of that backfield, like you said, a lot of weapons, and Cutler could always throw the ball. He makes insane throws. I watched some of that game.
His arm's crazy.
He puts the ball through spaces that just aren't there. I mean, I don't know how the announcers were talking about this. They were, you know, they were just saying, like, I don't know where he's throwing it. I don't know. But, you know, he can fit it in. And, yeah, Brandon Marshall has always been just an animal.
Yeah, no, it's you know, on that note you made about Cutler, that's definitely true. I think that's why he has, you know, five interception games here and there, because he trusts his arm that much. But it should be an interesting game. And, you know, like I said, the Bears are still, you know, rocking with them to win the division this year. So should be a good one on NFL Network.
Is that our sponsor this week? We actually we had a little falling out with Google Docs. We had to settle out of court. But
not getting any shout outs.
We're going with the NFL Network.
We're sponsored by Madden 13 this week, and in honor of that, I've played about 80 hours of Madden 13 this week.
Thank you, Madden 13.
It is
also brought to you by the Coca-Cola Corporation. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Falcons. Speaking of Coca-Cola. Atlanta, the Dirty Birds had a big opening week, and how can you say anything bad about this game? I don't get it. How can you say anything bad? We stomped on the Chiefs, and that offense looked like it was everything it has been built to be, and the defense came up big in the second half. Anything not to like, guys?
I think when you look at a couple things, Dave. So I think the first thing, the most obvious and the most pressing negative you can take away from the game is the injury to Brent Grimes, who's going to be out for the season with an Achilles injury. I think that he's a guy that's come on for the Falcons and established himself quickly as one of the
best. Turns out his Achilles heel is his Achilles heel.
that's a Chinese riddle for you. but, you know, quickly established himself as one of the best cover corners in the league, and I think that he was an asset to the team. And, you know, I was talking to Travis earlier today, and I think that losing Brent Grimes is bad, but even worse is that Chris Owens will have to play more, and you guys know how much I dislike Chris Owens as a player.
Rivalry.
He's the guy that keeps me up at night. You know, after the Green Bay game, I just couldn't think about, you know, him in that position in that game. So I think that's going to hurt. But then on one other point, I think that AC, you mentioned the defense, and I think that we gave up too many big plays, to be honest. I think that there are times that we had them in third down and medium, third down and long situations, and we didn't necessarily, you know, make the plays that we needed to make. Looking at the Kansas City offense, you know, they averaged Dexter McCluster averaged 5.4 yards a carry, and his long for the day was 46 yards. So I think that the defense...
Jamal Charles?
Jamal Charles, sorry. Yeah. And I think that the defense was opportunistic, which was good. You know, they had that pick off the tip and then the fumble recovery and pretty crucial moments in the
Speaking
game.
Speaking of the defense, Spoonie is a beast.
Spoon for MVP, dude.
Dude hits like a wrecking ball.
If he does not make the Pro Bowl, I'm going to boycott the NFL. That's
I'm
going to happen.
I'm going to never use a fork again. I'm only going to use a spoon.
We watched the game together, and, you know, the amount of times that we mentioned his name for making plays was just out of this world. So just a couple nitpicky things to take away from the game. But overall, I thought it was positive, and we'll see how we react next week without Brent Grimes.
Good, yeah. And Matt Ryan, I have to say, I got texts from a ton of people who are fans of different teams, but who happen to be watching the Falcons, and they were all just saying, whew, it just looks like, I don't know, I guess you talked about this, he got a little stronger, and he looks stronger stepping into those throws, he looks a little more authoritative, and they really opened it up for him. I like everything I saw from Dirk Koetter, the new offensive coordinator, and Julio Jones. I feel like Roddy White is the best number two receiver in the league right now. Is that fair to say?
I think it's
all due respect to Roddy.
Actually, speaking of receivers, we have a caller on the line who would like to talk to us about some receivers. You want to go to the hot phone lines?
Let's do it.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who is this?
Hey, this is Dirty Sean. Can you hear me?
Dirty Sean, what's going on?
Dirty Sean, what's up, my man?
Yo, I want to talk about the Oakland Raiders for a second.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about them Raiders.
Well, you're talking about receivers. They have nothing going on right now. I watched that last game, and they ran like 80% of the offense through Darren McFadden, which is fine. Some of the time, because he's a freak, but he can't do everything. And I think I can't remember which one. It might have been Hagan. They said had like two or three practices. They like got him off the street.
Johnny Lee.
They have nobody right now, and they're gonna get Demaryius Moore back. I think he didn't play, but Jacoby Ford has to get surgery, so he's out. So I was thinking they should sign Chad Johnson up. He's not playing for anybody. He's played with Carson Palmer most of his career. They got to sign somebody, or because they can't run it through Jeremy Fadden the entire game every week.
You know what? It sounds crazy. I don't know. You do know that Al Davis is not around anymore, but that management could go for it.
It might be kiss the baby time in Oakland. I mean, you could see it happening if they still have their rapport, if they still have a rat-a-tat on the field. Sean, Dirty Sean, if I may, to all the fantasy owners out there, let's say that this dream scenario does go down. Are you picking up Chad Ochocinco? Do you think that he's a fantasy asset going forward?
If they do have that rapport back, I would say he's definitely good for... I'm going to say in a standard Yahoo League, if all goes well, I could see him getting 10 points a game.
Wow.
Obviously depends on who they play, but Darren McFadden is obviously going to get some touchdowns, but they got to throw for it. They're going to get at least one passing touchdown a game.
What about Darius Heyward-Bey?
Darius Heyward-Bey looked like crap in that last game.
Damn.
Even though he was like one of the best receivers I had on the field, he dropped an easy ball at one point on the sideline, and you could tell Carson Palmer, I mean, he overthrew a couple throws that were those poor throws, but he needs someone to throw to.
Oh,
the second half, Darren McFadden all the time.
Yeah. All right, Dirty Sean, thank you for calling in. We very much appreciate this topic to talk about.
All right, man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, my man. Take it easy.
This is coming from Dirty Sean. He just dethroned the reigning champion of the league
in a very, very hyper competitive the league, and also throwing down the gauntlet on Darius Hayward Bay.
Yeah, that's right.
Just let us know what he thinks. And I guess Chad Johnson might not be a bad fit in Oakland. I think it all depends on, like you said, their management. I'm sure Carson Palmer wouldn't mind having him back. And I think that if things get uglier, I think people, tend to become more lenient in forgetting things in people's past. So we'll see about these next couple of games and what they do. And, if they do sign him, you heard it first, 10 points a game, guaranteed.
Stone cold lock.
Puts that on the eyes of his firstborn child.
Maybe they can get the whole gang back together and bring back Jamarcus if Carson has any injury troubles.
Maybe TJ Hoosiermama.
Hoosiermama would be a black and silver reunion.
Black and silver. Wow. Well, I guess he's into Chad Johnson. Is he into the Raiders, or is that just a Chad Johnson-oriented inspiration from Sean? I guess he loves his diva receivers.
He does.
I think just things came.
And Tom Brady.
Things end up making sense that, the life had taken a certain course, and then things came together. Sean realized it, and so.
You got to tell the people. You got to let them know.
You got to let them know what's going on, so.
Yep. You're right.
All right, getting back to the Falcons, we talked about how good Matt Ryan looked and how he looked pretty elite, making all the throws you need to make. One of the things that really helped facilitate that was Julio Jones. Guys, can we talk about how awesome Julio Jones is one more time?
Yeah, I mean, just to harp on what Ace has said, that I think that, as I was watching the game, I thought to myself, this is Julio Jones' world, and we're just living in it. I feel like he can do whatever he wants to do on the field. And if you give Matt Ryan time, and if we have the sort of rhythm we can establish on offense, it's going to be a long, long year, for opposing defenses. As Julio was quoted saying, when someone asked Julio with, you, Tony Gonzalez, and Roddy on the Falcons defense together, what can opposing defenses do to stop you guys? And, Julio's response was, you might as well go ahead and pack your things up and go home because, you can't. Who can you double in that situation of those three guys? So I definitely think that if he continues his progression and his development as he should, we should see some very promising things from Julio and the rest of the Falcons offense.
Yeah, he's as physically gifted a receiver as I remember at least the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, he reminds me of Andre Johnson, like, in his prime. He's just physically, he was catching short passes. We know he can get the ball deep. I remember that first touchdown of his career going between three defenders, laying out and snagging the ball. I really like him in the red zone. They were moving him around. They ran a screenplay for him that scored. Just get the ball in his hands and he will do the rest. He is as physically gifted as anyone in the league. And you're right. It looked like Matt Ryan just would take a look, survey the field. He had time. The offensive line played great. Let's give them some credit.
Definitely.
Gave him time and he just saw whoever had single coverage and he went to them because all those guys are so good at, making plays on the ball.
Yeah, and with that, a lot of guys got a lot of looks. One of the things that I loved about Julio was when they saw that they had a 5'10 corner who had switched onto him, they just straight audible and gave him a fade route in the end zone. Automatic touchdown. But Roddy White had a quiet 87 yards. Tony had a nice fantasy day for me in a loss and a touchdown. So you're right, a lot of guys are getting looks. A lot of guys are getting open. Because defenses, they don't know what to do. Who do you double? That's six people. But one thing I will say, one person who typically does get a lot of fantasy points or who does produce a lot is Michael Turner. And he didn't do very much in this game. If memory serves right, I think he had like 32 yards on 11 carries. Queasy got some touches. With this newfound aerial dominance, at least in one game, do you guys see this being the end of Michael Turner's run in Atlanta in terms of really producing a lot for the offense?
I'm not, you know, of the same school of thought that, you know, to be successful in this league as an offense, you need to sort of abandon the running game or put it second. But I do think that when you look at Dirk Cutter's offense and what he expects out of his backs and, you know, the versatility he brings, you know, to the offense, I think that Michael Turner's role might get reduced just a little bit. And, you know, I feel that Michael Turner is a bruiser. He's a guy that can get 3-4 yards of carry, 4 or 5 yards of carry. He can wear down defenses, and I think that that's going to be key, you know, if you have a lead going into the third, fourth quarter to sort of break a defense and break the game open. You know, that being said, I don't think that we're going to center on the run as much as we did in years past. You know, having him have, you know, 30, 35 yards, 35 carries a game. But I do think he's still going to be an integral part of the offense. You know, and look for Jaquiz Rogers to get even more carries and more looks, you know, as we, you know, advance in the weeks.
Yeah, I mean, what if it's a good thing for the offense, and it may not be great for Michael because he doesn't feel like he's the boss man anymore back when he was having 17 touchdowns in a season. But if they're basically splitting carries or Michael's getting 60%, you know, maybe he'll have a little more juice. Maybe, you know, some of that time he's on the sideline, they can put him on the bike there and get those wheels going a little bit. Because it's just, I mean, he's like, he's running in quicksand sometimes, and I love him. He gives it everything he's got, but he just, the burst isn't there. So maybe a little time off, maybe only getting about 15 carries a game, you know, will allow him to respond and make the most of that. And it might, you know, give him a little kick in the butt, so to speak, you know, requiring him to respond to play for those carries.
Yeah, I mean, Ethan, I think you have a good point, too, with the rest factor. I think that, you know, being able to spell him should definitely bring some positive to the offense.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially when, let's say that you get out to a lead in a game with that potent offense, it's going to be nice to be able to bring fresh Michael Turner out there to move the chains, you know, to kind of shorten the game and get those longer drives, which used to be the hallmark of the Falcons. I feel good about us going forward. This isn't something that we said we'd do, but I'm going to spring it on everyone right now because that's what I do, and this is foul territory. We actually have the Monday night game coming up against Peyton Manning, who looked very good in his debut for the Denver Broncos. We're not going to have another show until next Wednesday. So how do you guys feel about talking a little bit about that matchup and
Absolutely.
Maybe making some predictions?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I had the opportunity to watch the entire game on Sunday, and I think that Peyton Manning did some awesome things. To be honest, I think he looked like the old Peyton. I think he has command over the offense. He's comfortable with it, comfortable making calls at the line of scrimmage. So I think it's going to be very important, you know, especially without Brent Grimes, that we do the best job possible disguising coverages, you know, disguising looks, switching up looks, moving personnel around the field so that Peyton can't get into a rhythm, then he can't, you know, identify things before, you know, pre-snap reads to hurt it. So I think that's going to be the most important thing moving forward. But I like our chances on offense. I don't think they can, you know, if we can block up front, we can compete with anybody. And I think that, you know, neutralizing Von Miller is going to be very important. But like I said, the defense in the secondary is going to be crucial in winning this game.
Yeah, well, the one thing I like is that they don't have as deep of a wide receiver core as a lot of teams. And, you know, maybe it'll be Chris Owens on old man Stokely when it comes down to it. And you can use some of that youth and athleticism to catch up. This game terrifies me because I don't really know what to expect from our defense after one game, and Peyton Manning is Peyton Manning. But since we're running out of time, I'm going to make my pick, and I'm going to give a score. I'm going to say Falcons win in a close one, 28-24 Falcons.
Really went for an aggressive score there, Trev.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to underplay the defense for the Denver Broncos. They do have a good defense.
Yeah, they do have a good defense. All right, well, I'm going to give my prediction so Carson can finish it up. I would say the Falcons are going to get a little separation. I think we're going to get to old man Manning. I think we're going to win 30-21.
I think it's going to be a game of turnovers. I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, ups and downs for both offenses and defenses. I'm going to go ahead and say the Falcons escape 24-21. with Matty Bryce, Matt Bryan icing the game in the late fourth quarter.
I hope they ice it and that we didn't jinx it. The Falcons are looking good going into week two, and we are looking good going into week 14, I don't know, 13. We hope you will join us next Wednesday at the same time, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, for Foul Territory.
Foul Territory, do it.
Hey, I got the new dance for y'all called Soulja Boy.
Yo.
We got a punch and crank back to the sound.